Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Doug Mellard.
What's up, Doug Benson?
Well, I'll tell you what's up. Today, we're going to be joined once again by Anthony Ataminik. I guess so nice we're having him on twice.
Perfect. Yeah. We let the audience know, and we'll just get on back in there.
Yeah, we spent the entire first episode just learning how to say his name.
Yeah, it took that long.
And so, yeah, and so now we still have lots of questions. Did you think of anything you wanted to ask him in the week since we talked to him?
I still want to know how to pronounce his name.
I just told you it's Ataminik. Ataminik.
I'm very forgetful. There you go. Got it. Animaniac. Well, I remember it sounded close. You asked him if it sounded close to Animaniac, and that's how you remember. Because that's kind of close.
Kind of. I want to call him Ataminik at night.
Solid nickname.
Yeah, you know I'm all about giving everybody nicknames.
I love it.
Isn't that right, Doug?
I'm still calling my buddy Piccolo Joe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sticking.
That one's hanging in there. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess there's nothing more to say other than let's go to work.
Got it.
Hello again. Hello. It's Thursday, February 9th. How's your week been, Anthony?
Pretty good. I went home to see the parents, and then played 2-5 Hold'em live, and pulled down about almost 2,500, which is pretty good off the table.
Sure.
And then got out of there, you know?
Yeah.
Got the hell out of
there. You're a good player.
I'm a decent player.
Get
out.
Play. Yeah. Well, because also, you know, that's the thing about just showing up at a casino and sitting down at a table is nobody knows your play. I mean, you don't know anybody else's either, generally, but it's still like it's a great way to just get out of there before anybody figures out what you're up to.
Yes. And it's funny too, because there's this one guy who's at the table who's been there like the last few times. So I actually had one person, I saw him, he goes, "Oh, hey, man." And I went, "Hey," I'm like, "How are you?" And he's like one of those, you know, how you encounter those sort of utility players who, like, if they know you at all, they'll sort of like play fair with you. Like if they have it, they'll kind of like let you know by their bets and stuff. And so it was nice that he was there because he was sort of like a good balancer. And then the guy I ripped the most money off of was like, he looked like one of those guys in his 20s who, like, you know, studied game theory or whatever. And he's like playing Hold'em on his phone while sitting at the table, you know, all these sort of intimidation things with the headphones on, right? Acting like, you know, and you're just sitting there going, how many of you, like, you know, how many of you assholes were wearing like lizard glasses when Moneymaker was doing it? Like, it's so sad. Cause to me, I'm like, I just like playing cards. And if there's a theory out there, I don't want to know it. I don't care that much to know. And, but I know cards. So like, I got him on like a two pair, like a king six two pair, and he just bet me, and I called the last bet instead of even raising him, And I said, what do you have? I go, did you get the ace in the river? And I, you know, show my stuff. And he goes, I had a queen, you know, he had like nothing. He had like a queen high in his hand. And I went, what were you doing? He goes, you shouldn't have been in that hand. And I go, but I was, So I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah. That's my favorite, is the guy that explains to you why you shouldn't have won the hand.
Yes.
So, it's such a weird concept, but you know, I mean, because a lot of times they're right, but you know, hey, I'm here to gamble. I sometimes I'll win a hand because I'm fucking around.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, stick that in your game theory.
Yeah, you just got to change it up, you know. You can't, you know, especially if you're there to, when I'm playing, I'm there to have fun, or you know, yes, my idea of fun. I don't mind sitting there quietly and playing, but I do like
chatting it up, know,
I do like, yeah, just like, you know, being unpredictable.
Yes,
you know, because exactly, then that way you can win a little money, especially if somebody sits down that clearly doesn't know what they're doing, which, you know, happens, yes, a lot in these days. Yeah. Anyway, well, I'm thrilled to hear that you're out there playing cards with strangers and touching the cards and sitting close together, and
I have a mask on. I sit there. I then rinse my hands every half hour. I get up, take a break, smart, and go rinse my hands. But my favorite is, you know, no one wears masks at the fucking tables anymore, right? And I had, right, a guy in Canada just recently. We're sitting there, and this guy was sort of like an old wise ass. He goes, turns to me at one point, and goes, "What are you? What were you wearing a mask? You a doctor?" And I went, no, I said, I don't know if you know, man, but there's this like terrible global pandemic that's like killed like millions of people. I said, so that's why I'm wearing it. And he goes, oh, yeah, I don't believe it. And I went, you don't? I said, okay. I said, you know, give me your contact info so I know where to send the wreath. The table was like, whoa. And I went, hey, I didn't say shit. I was just wearing my mask. But that's my whole thing. I don't care if you don't want to get vaxxed, whatever. At this point, I don't give a fuck. I can't get worked up about it. But what I can't stand is when the same people who are like, leave me alone, like leave my body out of it, like don't tell me to wear a mask, whatever, pipe in on, yeah, you and go, yeah, well, look at you. And it's like, wait, this can't cut both directions, that both you're a selfish asshole and you want to impose it on me. Like, no, you know. No way.
Yeah, it's strange how they want to like have a shitty conversation with you about their shitty choice instead of letting you just have your own choice.
Yeah, that just
doesn't,
be quiet.
Doesn't affect them. It doesn't affect them. It's merely, yeah, seeing it makes them think of, oh, the government is controlling all of us, you know.
And, oh, I know.
You know, they want to recruit everybody to be just free and in danger.
Yeah, I mean, you need to get those. You need to get free and danger, and you have to have those sovereign citizen papers. I just love the stuff that's like developed in the last few years that has always been around, like the sovereign citizen thing, all that stuff. But it was always sort of like, if I grew up in Boston, right? Like in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there'd be like the guy in Harvard Square with the Lyndon LaRouche card table, and he'd have some paraphernalia and, you know, they'd tell you how you could declare you're a sovereign citizen, and there's a provision in the Constitution that allows it. But it was like, you know, it was like watching Morton Downey Jr. Like it was something that was just so fucking fringe that you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. Let them have it, you know? And now it's like there's whole movements that are like legitimate movements that are just these card table people who are now like taken seriously. I think anyone, at least my age, I'm, you know, 48, I sort of look at the world and go, wow, there was this weird flip where we like became the Jenny Jones show. Like we just became that. Like, and it used to be that we looked at that like in the zoo. And maybe that was the problem, is that we looked at it in the zoo too much. And then eventually we were in the zoo, the morning zoo. I'll shut up now. Isn't this how we ended up having me to have to come back here a second time? If I just keep talking, you're never going to get to your questions.
Well, that's what we wanted to talk to you about today. Do you mind just filibustering? Because we're both a little tired. little rundown, and sure. Just want to listen to you talk
too. Fortunately, my feeling like shit does not bar me from talking.
I should feel a lot better than I do right now. I mean, allergies are being weird, but and it's bumming me out because I should be just 100% happy and ready to go, because the third season of the Picard Star Trek show having its premiere tonight at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, and I get to go rub elbows with all those classic Star Trek characters. Yeah.
So wait. So
and I'm sneezing like crazy.
Yeah, you better get that shit under. You got to get Dr. Crusher. You should go up to Dr. Crusher, and be like, "Do you have one of your futuristic stims?" Go to Gates McFadden. You know what? You ever see the Gates McFadden improvised dance video that she did?
Probably, but I'm not picturing it right now.
Oh my God. I remember it was like in the mid 90s. I think I got a tape it's funny. I think you live in LA now, obviously, but we both lived in LA in the 90s, and there was a period of tape passing, right? Where if you worked in production or in any, you'd get these VHSs of these weird things. So
yes,
it's funny how it was like this analog YouTube, right? Like you would get this video and hand it to you, and you go watch it at home, and then you tell 10 people and pass the video on. And one of them was Gates McFadden must have, been in some dance troupe or something. And she just did this 6 minute video where she's just dancing around this loft. And it must have been pre Trek, or maybe it was very early, next gen, when she probably was doing multiple gigs. And it's just funny to watch, because you're like, Dr. Crusher, stop moving like that. Get me all excited.
That's how, here, watch this. And I watched it with my friends, and then we, wouldn't shut up about it for a while, was how I first saw South Park.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. That Christmas, that fucking Christmas.
Yeah.
Thing,
the Christmas thing with Jesus and Brian Boitano.
Oh my God. I was tripping the first time I saw that. I was tripping in my apartment. That was my version of pre-gaming. And I was I had an eighth of shrooms, and someone came over, was like, watch this. And I remember I was like, I need to see that again. I can't remember if it was real. I was like, I don't know if that was real or not. Well, are you a next gen? Are you a big Star Trek person? I know we talked a little bit about this last time, right?
Probably, but I'm just coming at it from the perspective of being a movie fan. So I've seen every Star Trek movie, some of which are actually, pretty good. And, the first six Star Trek movies, the pattern was that every other one was good.
Yeah, the evens were good. The odds were weird.
Yeah,
Though three, I would argue there's a thing with three that's sort of, because it's part of the 2-3-4 trilogy, it has this weird exemption.
Okay.
For me, even though three is terrible, three truly is a movie that is like, hey, did you watch the B-side treks from the original series? They brought back this old ass actress to play Spock's priestess. And you're like, what? Like, who thought at Paramount that this was a good idea?
I don't know. They just threw such weird shit at the wall. Cause part four, everybody loves, but I'm not crazy about when they have to ride a public transport and and they're sitting next to a guy with a silly mohawk and looking, they're looking at each other weird. I've got pointy ears, but you've got a dumb haircut. And
Picard season two.
Is he?
Yes. They got on the bus. Don't you remember? They get on the bus. They got that guy back.
That's hilarious. many years later, and he's now just older and has that same dumb. It was even kind of a, wasn't it sort of a faux hawk, or at least one that had been fluffed up to the point of not being as scary, like a mohawk supposed to be.
Yeah, so he has sort of had he had the look of a redheaded Jewish boy, but who got a mohawk. So he had this sort of like a nice Jewish boy who has like a punk look. That was what I remember about him.
But then there was the lady with the whales who, like, it all became about whether or not she was going to get to say goodbye. So that was, to me, it was also like not really a concern that a Star Trek fan would have.
With fucking Jillian and the god George and Gracie. And she's like, how did you know? How do you know she's pregnant? And my favorite is when they go out and Shatner, they do the pizza order and he goes, I'll have a Michelob. There are lines that he does in that, like, my friend did a little too much LDS in the 60s. It's like, but the Michelob, the way he says Michelob is like, I remember as a kid, I was like, I want to drink Michelob. It's so weird. We've talked about this before, the Meet Your Heroes thing, but Shatner is such a particular enigma to me because, like, I am so entertained by him and yet find him repulsive at the same time. You know,
and what, and how did you describe his hands?
Oh, like a stress ball. And I mean, blood soaked, like shaking a squishy blood sausage. That's what they look like.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, it matches this whole, you know, his face is like, kind of like that too. Now, you know, it's just red and,
oh God.
And old and just angry.
The fact that he's like, I just love when he's like, is your pep machine dirty? Do you have a dirty, stinky pep machine for your breathing at night? I can't breathe for shit because I'm 90. You're like, wow.
Yeah, and he, you know, and he went to space, and when he came back, they said, how was it? And he just quoted, like, practically quoted the song Rocket Man. He was like, I've never been more lonely. Like, he already knew from Rocket Man how isolating and sad it was going to be, but he still went.
He still went up there, and I just imagine that's like the thing is like he has the energy. We talked about it. It's true, but he really does have the energy of like my Canadian grandmother. There's this thing about certain men like Shatner and Trump, who happen to be people I could both do impressions of, but like, but there is this sort of like the old macho man who becomes sort of like an old grandmother energy. This sort of like, and it tends to be sort of beefier guys who, as they get older, maybe the testosterone must just like leak out, or I don't know what, but they just become so like grandma. And I don't know how else, they have grandma energy. And Shatner has really real grandma energy to me.
Well, because they're lasting, you know, like what grandmas usually live 10, 20 years longer than grandpas.
Yeah, that's
so
what
the
it
ones
is.
That do hang in just become grandmas also.
Yes. But Biden has the energy of like a grandfather, a grandfather who, like, you know, you took away the privilege to drive a car and yet he keeps coming and fighting you for the keys.
Keep saying the GOP's big line of attack, and it's not, you know, they're not entirely wrong, is that Biden's too old. And then during the State of the Union address, they're sitting there screaming stuff at an old man. Uh-huh. They think he's too frail to be president, but they also scream shit at him the whole time. And guess what? He gave it as good as he got. Them. Like he didn't lose control of the situation. He didn't get upset.
No, he's, let me tell you right now, Biden is employing, it's interesting because I don't doubt for a second that there are probably issues there and everything, but I don't think they're as pronounced as people think. And I do think that I actually talked to on my live stream a person who specialized in stutters, right, in speech pathology.
Right.
And one of the things that can happen with the stutter is as you get older, aphasia can start to sort of also sort of settle into your speech pattern, so that you not only have, you know, because the tools you use to sort of push through stutters can actually have the sort of incidental effect of starting to draw up a sort of intentional aphasia. So you end up sort of saying the wrong word for something or whatever, because part of your skill set of going out of that stutter was to like focus on one part of the word or think of an associative word to like pivot to, right? If you start to like get into a thing. So some of the stuff I think he goes through is probably, you know, the decline. I mean, anyone that has a parent in their late 70s or 80s is like, you know, okay, yeah, that there's a little bit of that. Even with someone who's really active, there's going to be just hiccups because we decay. But I do love that he does. He is doing the sort of very kind of, it's a very classic move that I think people don't recognize about Biden. And I'm not a, I am not some like, you know, big, like go blue, vote blue, or who, you know, go home or whatever kind of guy, but I do like politics and I like sort of assessing it within the matrix of what it is. And within the matrix of what it is, he's a pre-Clinton Democrat. He's a pre-triple, you know, the D triple C Democrat. He's of the Mondale Gary Hart world. And so there's a sort of liberalism in him that's different than the watered down, let's give away the store liberalism of the Clinton years. Right. And so I think what you see is these moments where they knew they were going to interrupt. That's what I always love too, is you don't think everybody, there's a million people advising him when they do that speech. They know that they're going to interrupt and whatever. So they have this plan to pivot it. And he did a rhetorical trap by letting them get so worked up. He actually was able to rhetorically trap them into a commitment on national television that they will have to break. They can't stick by it. So it's, people don't, I think, get the value of small things like that, that seem very incidental in the moment.
No, he's a man that's willing to play the games,
yes,
which, you know, in some ways, like Obama was not, you know, and that leads to less progress. I mean, Biden is getting so much shit done by trying to get a million things done, but he's getting like 100 done, you know, so like, you know, things are happening that are positive out of this administration. But, you know, still everybody's takeaway is just he's old and, you know.
Yeah, listen, you know, it's always like everything could be better. Everything could be better, obviously. And there's a lot of things that are disappointing that are not better than where they should be. But it's like a mix where you got to be like, this is the world I exist in. I can't just like also deny the world I exist in. I mean, that was one of the great moments today was Jimmy Dore blocking me on Twitter.
Whoa!
That was one of the great fucking moments of my life, was finally that dirtbag blocked me.
Why did it take him so long?
You know, I don't know. I think it was sort of a wall collapse. Like I started really going after the gray zone people. And it's very weird because some of those people I know, like I know Aaron Maté and I don't get it. And my thing is, I don't care. You can think whatever crazy radical shit you want to think or whatever. I don't really, that stuff doesn't bother me. It's like the way people be like, they need to take Joe Rogan off the air or whatever. It's like, I don't know. Do they, like, what does it matter? Like, it's, you push back against people when they say terrible things and it should all come out in the wash. I'm not someone who really thinks that banning people or things of that nature does anything but actually make it grow. But
right, but there's instances like today all over Twitter is trending bullying works because everyone's so excited that AMC backed off of, or not AMC, Netflix. Netflix has backed off of, you know, they were going to just make it so you couldn't share your password. And you had to sign in once a month to prove that you were, you know, still even signing in yourself. And they've already, you know, because the backlash was so strong, they've already, you know, taken that back and they're not going to do it. And that's where I think, you know, everyone loudly complaining about these things really can.
Well, absolutely. You know,
it's like they float these ideas almost on purpose to see, well, let's see how much backlash there is. And then we'll make everybody happy by backing off of it.
We'll raise the price of Netflix a dollar and distract everybody by saying we're not going to let them share the passwords, then back down on that. And then everyone's paying an extra dollar and not complaining about that. Right. I mean, that's like bullying works. I mean, really, someone should have the hashtag should have been. And I'm, again, this is not me believing this, but this is like the free market capitalism works in that sense. Right. This was enough people went, hey, fuck this. And then it was enough of a movement to pull it off. You could argue, for instance, even with Spotify, they spent all this money on Rogan, right? They're not seeing, I mean, I know this in multiple ways. They're not seeing the return that they want on that investment. And they've just had to fold their entire podcast wing. So like, is the problem in terms of money and how people, you know, spend it at that level and who they pull on? And then, okay, let's say there's a lot of people who are like, we can't stand what Joe Rogan did, so we want to pull him off. And this is just an example, you know, then that groundswell will happen. Like Alex Jones crossed a line, right, to a degree where what he did was, in the eyes of the law, judged slanderous, and there was recompense that needed to be made, right? That you could argue is, you know, how things work out to pay someone back for bad behavior. And then the other end of it is sometimes someone twists us the wrong way, right? We're not into them, but that doesn't mean that they have created the grievous act of, like, you know, crossing the line. Like, for instance, like Jimmy Dore. I mean, does it bother me that Jimmy Dore exists and, like, has a platform? Of course it does. Do I think that means he should have his platform taken from him? You know, that's for private companies to make those decisions, right? But I can at least call him the you know, jerk I think he is on my thing, and you know, and the manipulator. And quite frankly, I think one of the tip of the spear of really setting leftism back, like making it evangelicalism, the People's Party, and all this stuff being such just a money grab. And it's sad. It's like sad to prostitute people's suffering for a money grab, you know? I mean, there's no way you can tell me that you can stand on the same stage with a guy like Jason Hinkle, who uses the tired white supremacist line about slavery, about how, well, you know, people in Africa sold people into slavery, so therefore, you know, why should we be blamed for it? When and that's not me, that's Jason Hinkle saying that. Okay, just be very fucking clear.
It sounded like you saying it.
No. Wait
you
a minute.
Just said it.
This sounds like the promo out of context promo clip.
Yeah, we're gonna edit that and put it up top.
but it is, like, amazing. That's such a tired. It's like I brought up Morton Downey Jr. Right? It's like that's a tired line that's been said by dumb assholes since I was a kid, right? That's a tired old line. That's not a new idea. And yet, you know, people, I mean, hey, listen, you guys wanted me to talk, so I'm talking. This is your fault, just so you know. This is all your fault. Well, there you go. So there's a bunch of other folks sitting there saying, oh, we represent the left's causes. And that's then what people see. That's what people who are defining and maybe do have money to put their money places, they're going, oh, I guess I'll put my money here. And that's where I think, you know. So anyway, I'm glad he blocked me, so I don't have to, you know. I mean, now I just have to use my Shadow Puppet account to find videos to, you know, show on my show. Shadow Puppet, Sock Puppet, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know the exact terminology, but we got to take a break.
No, let's keep going, man.
No, we got
simmering.
We got to let somebody else talk. So we're going to go to some adverts, and we'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back, and for those of you who missed the sound of Anthony's voice,
that's nobody.
Here he is again. So, Doug had a question that he wanted to ask you that he thought of between last week and this week. You want to go ahead and ask him, Doug?
Sure. How is it owning a pet
that
turtle?
I exist?
What's pet turtle life like?
What's
is that true?
What, you mean Tootie?
I read that you own a pet turtle.
Yeah, Tootie, the turtle. Yeah. I own a tortoise. My wife and I actually, I mean, I should say that my wife is the one, the origin of Tootie the turtle is that my wife's roommate's ex-boyfriend had this tortoise in like a shoebox in the basement of a house. And they were like, you know, the father had bought it and then just like put it in the basement. And this thing somehow fucking survived. And so she rescued it and was like, no, absolutely not. So they brought the tortoise to her apartment. And this is when we were dating. And so, you know, I had a box turtle growing up that's my mom now still takes care of. It's like 40
years old. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're a weird family of longevity pets. Like, my mom had a parrot, a Red Lord Amazon, and that thing lived from 1968 to 2007.
And oh, it was my like, God.
Oh, yeah. And it grew up like it like was a lot, you know, thought I was its child and like would preen me and stuff. I know. But Tootie behind me in my area here, in fact, I mean, for you guys just to see this coffin like thing that you see.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that is the turtle's cage.
Oh, OK.
And so the
one of those turtle coffins.
It's a turtle coffin. So it's basically a huge environment with two covered areas. Tortoises are different than turtles. Tortoises are it's not like I'm not like the guy from the Tonight Show. What's his name? That guy used to come.
Oh, Jack Hanna.
I'm not Jack Hanna, but this tortoise, much like my wife, her background is Pakistani. So it's from the desert. So it's very cool with really hot and cold temperatures. I think we did a blood test and Tootie's a girl. And she just sort of chills out and gets very active. They're actually quite fast. Like, you can take her out and put her on. I know Paul F. Tompkins loves turtles. And so I made this video for like a sketch show or like a variety show one time. And it was sort of a take on like a Sesame Street, like those, like, you know, sort of soft videos they used to show when you were a kid. You'd kind of like watch like a rabbit in its day. So I did one on the turtle. So she's like quite active, and then she'll just estivate for part of the summer and she'll hibernate for part of the winter and does her thing. But, you know,
wait, so how old is this turtle?
Let's see. Well, we know that she's at a minimum 17, 18, let's say 20 years old, probably.
So when a turtle is estivating, that means that it's listening to the music of Gloria Estefan.
Yes, yes. So it listens to Gloria. It listens to Gloria Estefan in the summer, and then hibernates in the winter. And if I could think of a good hiber pun, I would, but I can't. I can't think of anything that is a band that's hiber.
Well, you know, Doug asked such a hardball question with that. It was such a gotcha interview question.
It was a total gotcha question.
Doing the research and finding out about your turtle situation. I didn't do any research to lead to my question that I have for you.
Yes.
You know, that's the great thing about having you on 2 weeks in a row is that first time I didn't think of this. And now that I have, I can address it. Or ask it rather, but what is the when are we going to get more what we do in the shadows?
Ooh, well, you're going to get more, but I don't know. I mean, I actually legitimately do not know when it will come out. What I know is, when the pandemic happened, we had this weird thing where we ended up shooting season 3 in the beginning of 2021, and then we shot season 4 at the end of 2021. So we were trying to write the production schedule because seasons one and two were always filmed August through December. So that you got, you know, the dark, you got more dark time.
Right.
And so then obviously 2020 fall, we did not film. So as they've been correcting the airing schedule, it feels like they're sort of maybe rolling it back. So my guess is maybe in the spring. Like, it would seem like this would be the year that it would start to come back in the spring, like sometime in April or something. Uh-huh. Last year it aired in the fuck, like in July, which my thing was the year that that season three aired in the fall made the most sense to me. Cause I was like, what we do in the shadows should be around Halloween, but I'm not a Fox programming executive. So I don't, or FX programming executive. So I don't know. But I know, what can I say? We got picked up for seasons five and six. That's public. So five hasn't even come out yet, and there's still six to come. You will be getting it soon.
But as a recurring character on that program,
yes.
Do you ever worry that they're just gonna suddenly up and murder you?
Yeah. Every year. Every year I wonder whether I will come back. I presume now at this point I don't, because I feel like they would at least do the honor of killing Sean on the show and not like in between seasons.
Right. It wouldn't be like, right? Oh, that guy passed away. What a shame.
Yeah, no, that would seem pretty strange based on the level of involvement I now have in the show.
Yeah.
Paul, I think at one point I said to Paul, I go, Paul Sims, you know, showrunner. And I said, is this the year you kill Sean? He goes, why? He goes, why would we do that? We can't kill Sean. I was like, all right. I was like, that's good to know. But you know, I think it's interesting about that show is one, it's a show that, you know, as an improviser, you get a hand in sort of giving a little bit of the direction of it, like a little bit, right? But it's nice to just act in something and not have the responsibility of like understanding why it happens or like what goes on, you know, like yeah. Why do, you know, that you just get to be told, do this, show up and say this at this time. I really am like, wow, actors have the easiest fucking job on the planet. It's like, and they're like, well, I had to think about the character. It's like, oh God. Okay. So, all right. Like that's still easier than having to think about a world and have it make sense and write it down. So like, I feel like, the writers really do such a great job. And I've had like people who are my improv students who are keeping me employed because they're now writers for the show. So like it's one writer, Sarah Naftalis, who was a student of mine. I mean, I remember she was like in like three classes of mine. And then one day they're like, oh, Sarah wrote this episode. And she said she was a student of mine. I was like, no, I was like, that's Sarah. I was like, holy shit. And so that's like the best, I would say the best thing of doing this show or doing any show, like Three Busy Deborahs with, you know, Mitra and all of them, is all the students that you had who were really good, quirky, wonderful people who now are actually up and coming and not old like me, and they will hire me. So that's what I'm really thrilled about. But, the fun thing about the show has been also that there's so many Brits there, and the British sort of like, it's like half and half. I think it's half three Americans, three Brits, in terms of people who like hang out and we spend the most time together. So it's interesting also how much you learn about British culture that like you just didn't know existed. Like I had no idea there was a Channel 4 dating show where they reveal someone's genitals.
Oh yeah.
I had no idea. And Matt and Natasha were like, Matt was like, I really want you. Have you seen this? And I'm like, no. I'm like, what is it? He's like, just wait. He goes, and he kept making the point of going, my nan on a Friday, on a Saturday night, my nan can see this at 10 p.m. Like, and so you want, and so like, I like the cultural exchanges that that we have with each other. So
you but, just answered my follow-up question.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, it's fine. Because it's just going right where I wanted it to go. Because I wanted to ask you, as a person who does impressions.
Yeah.
What comes first? Like figuring out that you can do that voice or deciding to do a voice and then figuring it out?
Generally, I would say it comes from sort of like, I would say mostly it comes from making fun of something, right? Or it's either like a mix of like, you want to make fun or you want to portray something accurately. So you sort of try the voice on, right? So like, if I do Shatner, right, it's out of necessity. It's like probably because I like, you know, wanted to emulate Shatner when I was younger. I found it funny. Hold on. Now let me talk this out. No, you know, ultimately, I would actually say that that's a weird answer. I feel like sometimes it's because you can do the voice and you figure out you could do the voice. But since I am not like, I would not say I am an impressionist. Like James Adomian is an impressionist. That's a person whose skill is unparalleled, right? In his ability to take someone and do them. To me, that's like impressive. I would say not to be like, I'm like this, but like him. But I think I identify more with like, maybe like the way that Dana Carvey or like Phil Hartman would take on an impression, which is like, maybe I can't do it 100% accurately, but I can sort of paint a picture of a character. Now, James can do both. He could both paint a picture of a character and do it incredibly accurately. I could do some of that. But like when I did a variety show, you know, and I was doing a weekly show and I had to do different things, I'd be like, all right, I've got to try to do my best Gene Hackman. That doesn't mean I can do a good Gene Hackman, but I have to find at least one hook that would work for that, right? Or, you know, so sometimes you do concept pieces where you're like, okay, I can do this, but only around this way. Like Shatner's the only one for me where it's like, I finally feel like my Shatner has fit with how I do him. He's aged into my impression. Cause I think I do Shatner like old Shatner, like when he was did the whole thing, right? Where he's like, you know, like I looked out on the earth and I saw that pale blue dot and it made me breathless. That's like very old, right? Old Shatner. I can't do like TV. Like I can't do Kevin Pollak's like, oh, what about the world as we go? Like that is so cartoonish to me. That doesn't feel like sitting in the pocket of like a real voice, even if it just is real in your head, is really great. So Trump, I had to learn though, because Trump to me, when I started him, was very cartoonish. And right. I wanted to know how to do him really well. And then I felt at a certain point, I still believe this, I think they actually were doing me. I think he actually started doing my version of him. Because it kept sort of feeding back and forth. But then, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like, and also I tend to do impressions of things like, you know, I'll try to do Patrick Stewart. You know, I like doing Patrick Stewart, always talking about fighting Moriarty on the holodeck, you know?
Yeah.
But do I think I do like a great Patrick Stewart? No, I think I do like a serviceable impression. Also, my Patrick Stewart and Matt Berry are not that far off from each other. They're basically general British guy. I will say Matt shakes his head when I do a British accent.
Right. Well, that's the other thing I was curious about is you're working with these actors that have, and they're working with you as well. You, all of the characters have, you know, pretty specific voices.
Yes.
You know, like they're all people that if you spend a lot of time around, you must just kind of be able to do all of them, but you can't sit around doing them all to their faces.
I'll do Matt to his face. I'll do Mark. Like, I can do Mark to Mark. I can tell Mark, you know, but like, again, that's like a serviceable. K-Van does people's, K-Van Novak, you know, plays Nandor. He's also like a masterful impressionist.
The voice of his character is unlike any other ever. And he stays true to it at the same time. Yes. You know, so he still can surprise you with a certain inflection or a way of saying something, but it's still always very, very Nandor. It's amazing.
Well, it's funny too, is that one time I played for them, you know, I have like a line learner app, right? You know, so like I can learn them in the trailer and I do all their other lines, right? And then it times it out so that it just plays everything, the cues, and I could just run it over and over again. So I do all of their voices. And one time I hit it by accident and Matt was like, wait, what was that? What was that? And I was like, oh, it's my line learner app. And they're like, play it. And like, it's me doing all of them in the scene.
Oh my God.
And they were, you know, pleased. I'm not sure. I mean, it is funny. Matt and I knew each other. We not at all. I didn't know him at all. And in fact, like, you know, I am still obviously a great admirer of Matt's. Like, you know, I watched him from the old Channel 4 shows and, you know, Marenghi and the Mighty Boosh, all that stuff, IT Crowd. So like getting to work with him was like, oh my God, you know, this is a pretty cool deal, right? And then like life truly imitated art in the sense of like, we just happened to get on really well. And then we, I would say, you know, yeah, we sort of have a Sean and Laszlo friendship. I think it's not really, I mean, we have a normal friendship, but like there's definitely like a hang around kind of vibe that I'm glad we have because it makes the scene work. And when we decide to improvise, makes it very easy, you know?
He's, you know, that voice is so distinct that now I can't remember what company, but he does voiceovers in ads now. For some
company. Oh, yeah. What does he do?
He's, you know, I forget which one it is, but it's fun to hear his voice in that context too, because it's just, you know, he's just great to listen to.
He is great to listen to. Everybody's, I mean, that's a lucky, talk about a lucky gig, man. That's like, that yeah. was a lucky job. That was just a lucky job. I love the movie. And I remember sitting with my cousin and going, why can't I fucking do that? You know, like, yeah. you know how when you're like sitting, just bitching about why can't you just be in some easy, wonderful yeah. thing for once in your fucking life and not like, you know, walking out on stage going, how's everybody? Everything, everyone good? Look at your dumb faces.
That's probably not a great opener.
That's why I don't do a lot of live performing. Look at all your dumb faces. You know, I don't have COVID. No, but like, but like it's that's like the nicest thing is like, you know, it's actually good. Which is like a cool deal, you know, and it's like a cool deal to be doing that. Like 30 Rock was great, but I know you talk about having done extra work, Doug. It's like, you know, were we like enhanced extras on the show? I guess, but we were extras on the show. So you're like, yes, it's great that I was around 30 Rock for 7 seasons, but I can't really feel like I can say there's any credit due at all to my turning and nodding and reacting, you know? Whereas at least I can, with this show, I can go, yeah, I have a little piece, a little corner of it that like I can say I contribute to, which is nice.
Yeah, it's real cool. And, but they do pull some stuff on, they'll just really, you know, murder the hell out of a character.
Yeah.
I felt bad for the Sklar brothers while just one of them. Because they brought them on. Did you see that episode, Doug?
Oh no!
They brought the Sklar brothers on to play like home repair guys that have a TV show,
yeah.
And then one of them one of them doesn't make it and dies pretty early on. So they had to decide which Scar gets, you know, much more lines, you know, so they really had to, you know, work it out. But I talked to both of them and it was like, you know, it's still a win for both of them that they're so funny on that show. And one of them, you know, dies so quickly.
I was surprised by that because I wasn't there for, they were filming, but like I wasn't on set for that one. So I saw them when we were there and then we went out for the Emmys thing for the panel and we went out to dinner and I still don't know. And I kind of went, I don't want to know what happens in the episode. I said, cause I like to watch the ones that I'm not in like fresh. And they're like, oh man, you're really going to be, you know, and we're all out to dinner and they're sort of talking around it or whatever. And then I watched it and I went, holy shit, they killed one of them like immediately. And you're like, that does. What did they say, Doug? Because I would feel like no matter how much of a win it is, you'd be like, because there is a thing about that show in particular, it's a fun set to work on. So I feel like you'd be pissed if you didn't get to be around for a bit. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you'd have to be, you know, probably had to be. You know, they probably both got there a week ahead of time for, you know, to quarantine before starting the work.
Yeah.
And then to have one of them just like be, you know, and who knows how it was shot. Like if he, the one who did die, if he ended up getting, you know, still almost as many days work as the other, you know, I don't know how they shot, you know, you just don't know how they shot it, but it felt like one brother had a much bigger part than the other.
And it does
feel like it just came down to like it feels like the which the one who had the mustache at the time probably ended up getting to live because he looked more like one of those TV Homer Pear guys. That episode's perfect television because it makes fun of those home repair shows so well, and at the same time it's not a bottle episode, it's still a real episode of what we do in the shadows. But
they bring things back. Like that's what I like is it's like smart. They like brought something back that I was like, oh shit. And then I was like, oh, that's why he was in town. And we had dinner together. Like, I don't want to spoil the episode, but I'm like, why, you know, it didn't make sense to me at the time, but I was like, sure, I'll get dinner, whatever. And like, we were talking and he's like, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm just in for a little bit. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what the hell he's doing. And then you watch it and you go, oh, okay. That's fucking funny. You know? So it is kind of funny to be in the show, but also not like, you know, you're only in the things, obviously, you only know about the things you're in, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really share the rest of it with me.
Well, that's what happened to me on Moonlighting is that after being like a person in the office for a while, they started just, you know, having me be a stand-in in scenes that I wasn't in. So I would end up just working every day on this show and sometimes be on camera and sometimes just be a stand-in. And, you know, so at least I'd get to see all the stuff that was happening outside the office because it would have been weird for years and years to only be around during the office scenes, you know.
You say that because we did stand in, there was a thing where we were doing stand in pay on 30 Rock where we would do the writer's room scenes. This was season 1 and 2. And they said, hey, do you want to stand in? Right. And I thought, oh yeah, you know, because I quit my pizza job, but like I quit my like waiting tables job and was like, I'm subsisting now on this one show, you know? So I was like, yeah, sure. And you know, I forget how much it was a day, but at the time it was like, this is it. This is the money, you know? And, and then when you realize that all your like fuck around downtime just dissolved because now you like go from being on set, you know, reacting to, okay, now stand here and then do your stand in work. Okay. And now okay, we're ready to shoot. Okay, now you're here on set. And I was like, oh no, this is too much like a real job. And I, and after season one, I went, I can't do the stand-in. I can't, I don't want to do that. And they're like, really? And I'm like, I don't, yeah, I feel like it's too much. I'm missing, because you're missing all the bits. Like, you're missing the bits time. Do you know what I mean? The hangout.
Yeah, because,
like,
all the actors leave the set during the lighting, so it's only just stand-ins and, you know, all the grips and
God, moonlighting. DPs. You know what's so weird? So the people who I used to house for and would put me up when I lived out in L.A., my mom did the show Hair in Boston. She did the touring company with this woman, Toby. Her ex-husband, Neil Mandelberg, edited the black and white episode, the Emmy winning episode of Moonlighting, the black and white one. And he also did the Romeo and Juliet one. I guess there was like a
Shakespeare episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was the editor for both of those. He was right, but he won the Emmys for those two episodes, I guess.
Wow.
For editing. I mean, I will say he was kind of a prick.
Is he dead?
No, just divorced from my mom's friends, so I don't care anymore.
So you don't care. You don't care about fucking Mandelcorn.
I used to steal quarters from his like quarter jar to buy weed in Encino. I would steal $50 worth of quarters and then go to this place in Encino where they had like a pool in the back, and you know, like, and the guy had like the really like neon green weed. That's what I remember. This was like, well, great weed.
You just stole another hour of our show.
And, I'm sorry, guys.
And it was incredible. I thought, like, oh, if we have him on again, we'll get to all the questions about names. Then I thought, what if we just each ask one question, see what happens? And that's what happened. Is it took you the whole hour to answer two questions.
I'm the captain now.
But let's do our, but we can't invite you to come back next week because we do have another guest booked already. But I swear I'm going to reach out and get you back and ask you the questions that we ask everybody. But
anytime you
this has been delightful. It's been a delight. What would you like to promote aside from, what we do in the shadows coming back someday, probably spring?
Probably spring or summer. Yeah, just Coffee with Tony live, twitch.tv/CoffeeWithTony, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, I would guess. And we do all kinds of fun stuff, and you should check that out. And I'll be in South by Southwest March 9th through the 14th doing shows.
Oh,
there.
Fantastic. Ooh. That's fun.
Ooh. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Tony. We've been not saying your last name the whole show because we were discussing it beforehand, but I think I'm pretty good at it now.
Okay.
Tamanik.
Yeah, man. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I could do it. I panicked, but then I pulled it out.
You did.
Doug Mellard, what do you got to plug, buddy?
I'll be opening for Dan Cummins at the Empire Theater in San Antonio, February 24th, and the Majestic Theater in Dallas, Texas, February 25th. Get tickets now.
Oh, I love it.
Come on, see us. What about you, dude?
Doug Loves Movies is back at the Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles on Sunday afternoon, March 5th, and all of my dates and stuff are at douglovesmovies.com. And there might be, I might have a little crossover. Doug is already in Austin, and I'm going to be at some of South by Southwest as well. So maybe we'll see you there, Tony.
Oh, man, I'd love to see you there. And thanks again for having me. I this really is a lot of fun. And it's great to talk with you because I've been a fan of both your stand-up for a while. And so that's a cool thing to get to talk to you guys.
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm gonna check
out some of your stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Oh, and also for the title of this episode, since it's a second part, I came up with something. Okay. So thank you again. And
yeah, thank you.
Matt, get ready with that closing. It's not even a closing theme song. It's just a quick sting. But as always, Doug and Tony Show Part 2, The Search for Tony's Gold.
Got it.